Deadpan listeners, time for another rousing episode of Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast.
Yay.
God, I'm so excited.
I'm your deadpan host in the noisy chair. What's my name? It's Jack Mangan, a.k.a. Noodle. Our deadpan guest today is not very deadpan at all. He's a very energetic Mark Forman, the Brooklyn blues man, Shogun of Taiwan. But before we talk to Mark, there's lots of stuff we got to do, so let's get right to it. No, not that yet. First, let's hear a bumper from one of the glamorous ladies of the deadpan.
You're listening to Jack Mangan's Deadpan Podcast, in case you hadn't realized it. This is Chris the Fixed Kitty, also the voice of Lady Macbeth the Quasar, in Jack's upcoming patio book, Dirk Moonfire and the Nefarious Space Women. I don't sound like this in the patio book. I also don't sound like this in my show, the Adult Space Child-Free Podcast at www.gettingby.net, where I discuss child-free issues and rant against the excessive child-proofing and child invasion of the rest of the world that isn't specifically a child space, to the detriment of free speech and general manners. I talk more about it, but then I might lose this deadpan tone. Deadpan. It makes me wonder. Cooking in regular pans ensures that the food and any microbes in it are dead. That's the basic evolutionary advantage of cooking, after all. Would cooking in dead pans make the resulting food and its microbes undead? Is there a creepy speculative fiction waiting to be written, possibly by Jack, on this strange theme? Damn, I'd better stop. The deadpan is slipping. And now, your deadpan host, Jack Mangan.
So last episode of Deadpan, we actually didn't have an interview. We had all listener contributions in the typical Deadpan categories. Dumbass memory, stolen rap lyrics, highbrow, lowbrow, all that fun stuff. And I think it was a smashing success. So, you know what? The door is open. We're going to have an open door policy at the Deadpan. Just whenever you feel inspired with rap lyrics, a dumbass memory, anything at all, go ahead and send it in. You can record it yourself and send it in, or just leave it on the voicemail. Excuse me. 206-350-TOMI. Try to keep it relatively short, if you can. It doesn't have to be funny, just has to really be engaging and interesting. But, you know, whatever. I'm easy.
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
No, still not yet. Let's listen to this voicemail from Alvy from Boulder.
Hi, Jack. It's Alvy in Boulder. I was thinking about names for your followers, those who listen to your Deadpan podcast. Have you thought about Deadites? Because that'd be kind of cool with the Evil Dead reference and all that. Just a stupid thought as I'm eating lunch and really bored. Okay, bye.
Alvy is just awesome. I assume Alvy was inspired by the fact that I had just used the word deadpanites a few times. Deadites is very cool, but I believe it's already in use by the Army of Darkness and Evil Dead fan clubs. You know, I guess you guys don't really have to have any name at all, but if you want one, then there you go. Alvy's giving us some food for thought as he was eating his lunch. Really bored. If you want to call me, feel free to call any time. The number is 206-350-TOMI. 206-350-8664. Feel free to call and breathe heavy, share your thoughts, whatever you feel inspired to do. But please call. I'm lonely.
If you're looking for world-class podcast fiction, patiobooks.com has it. At patiobooks.com, you'll find 40 titles to choose from, including classics such as Earthcore, The Pocket and the Pendant, Moravi, and Spherical Tomy, plus new fiction like Singularity, The Tenth Cow, the short story anthology Voices, and dozens more. Dig sci-fi? Patiobooks.com has it. Fantasy? Patiobooks.com has that too. Comedy, thrillers, supernatural horror, historical fiction? Patiobooks.com has it. Best of all, every title is free, and you receive personalized feeds, allowing you to download new chapters whenever you like. So when you're searching for intense, top-notch fiction, bebop over to patiobooks.com. Patiobooks.com has it.
Dumbass Memories.
So whenever it comes time for Dumbass Memories, I look over the segments that I've written up a little bit or that I've even recorded already, and I just think, no, that's way too fucking embarrassing. But here we go. For this week, let's go really juvenile. This is a memory, I guess I was in sixth grade. Now, there were two Michelles that were friends. We'll just call them Michelle number one and number two. And it turned out that Victor in our class had a crush on one of them. I don't know, Michelle number two. So Curtis, you know, the kid who always got in trouble and was kind of like the stay after school every day kid. I don't know where he heard this, but he said, Victor wants to stick his hot dog in Michelle's hamburger. So out on the playground later, it comes up again how Victor has a crush on Michelle number two. So I just repeated what I had heard Curtis say. But for some reason, when I repeated it, it became like the comedy event of recess. Nobody made a big deal out of it when Curtis said it, but of course when I said it, it exploded and just spread like a wildfire. The handful of kids I said it to, they just, for some reason, they thought it was the funniest thing they'd ever heard, and they ran around the whole playground repeating it. And of course, Michael ran right up to both Michelles and said it. And they said, ew, who said that? And he said, of course, Jack said that. And the two Michelles said, let's get out of here. And to this day, I'm still embarrassed by that. So, Michelle, I'm sorry. It was very tasteless. I can see why, later on, you never invited me to any barbecue.
Dumbass Memories.
So, time now for the deadpan interview with our special guest, Mark Forman, the Brooklyn Blues Man. And you may even notice that I conducted the interview as my alter ego, Mr. Nasal.
Moshi Moshi.
Oh, I'm sorry, I have the wrong number. I was trying to call Mark Forman.
Oh, didn't you order sushi? Spherical sushi? No? Okay.
So how are you today, Mark?
I am rubbery.
Rubbery?
Which is Japanese for lovely.
I don't speak Japanese. I'm sorry. I didn't catch
it. Well, that's a shame. I guess we won't have very much to say to each other.
So tell a little bit of your story. Tell a little bit about, you know, how you became a world-famous Brooklyn blues man and podcaster, how you ended up interested in doing podcasting at all. And
right.
I guess tell your story up to that point.
Okay. Basically, as the Brooklyn blues man, part of my stage name implies that originally I am from Brooklyn. That's where I grew up. And at the age of 18, I left there to go to school in Tucson, Arizona, right down the road from where you are, Jack. Mm-hmm. Go Wildcats! So anyhow, when I was there, I studied a bunch of different stuff, and like most young people, didn't really have a clue as to what I wanted to do. I was pre-law and taking a bunch of political science-related classes, and I did some soul-searching. I thought, well, you know, maybe I could be a good lawyer, but I don't know that I want to be, because my opinion of lawyers was that they made a living off of taking advantage of people at their lowest point, and to say, well, that kind of be a bad way to make a good living. And so I just started thinking about what other things might there be. So I just started taking some classes for general interest, and one I took was Chinese poetry in translation. And, you know, very interesting kind of thing. And I was always good with languages, so I started thinking, you know, gee, I wonder if perhaps if I took this language, being Chinese, that maybe someday, you know, then I could read the poetry in Chinese and get a lot more. Because, you know, you always lose when you go from a language to another. There's a lot of nuance that right. just doesn't carry across. So anyhow, that was kind of an idealistic thought that I have. But in any case, I did start taking Chinese. I loved it. And I was at it. And within a year, I realized I had half of a major. Excuse me. So I stuck with that. And that was kind of like the beginning of the trail that leads up to being here in Taiwan and whatnot, but didn't make that move right away. Had got married, had a family going, was working in Tucson and doing different stuff. But unfortunately, my marriage ended, so there is a factual basis for the XY files, which we'll get to in just a second.
Okay.
And, you know, around that time, I had a good friend. I recently podcasted about him. His name is John DeStacio. And John and I were real good buddies. Unfortunately, John had an illness that curtailed his life. And we were talking about some stuff pretty much at the point where I was, you know, deciding, am I going to make this move and do this thing, leave America, move to a foreign country, make a whole new start, all this kind of, you know, big step, exciting but kind of scary kind of stuff. And John encouraged me. And John was saying, well, you know, Mark, in my life, pretty much everything I want to do, I've done. I mean, if I could have another day, another year, another 50 years, I'd be happy for anything, but I can't control that. But at the very least, I don't have any regrets. He says, I encourage you, man, if this is the time and it looks like it is, make your move, because, no, you don't want to be sitting there later in life regretting that you had an opportunity and you didn't take advantage of it. And so I did, and that was almost 19 years ago. And originally the idea was, okay, come here for like 2 years and you know, get hands-on with the language, get hands-on with the culture, and see, you know, see what it was like. And if I liked it after like 2 years, you know, I'll make a decision. Do I want to continue, whatever? And that 2 years flew by. And right around somewhere in that two-year period, I had already met my wife and my second wife, and we've been together now for about, 16, 17 years, something like that. And, you know, that was a real good move. And, you know, there were a lot of frustrations and there was some culture shock and whatnot, but Taiwan was always a fascinating place to me, and it still is. And so I really enjoyed living here, and I basically found my way in about 13 years ago. I started my own business. In the process of that, I was a man that kind of lost a lot of contact with my culture and didn't realize it until about a year or so ago. I was reading an article, I believe, matter of fact, yeah, it was in the New Times, the local Phoenix kind of entertainment weekly.
Right,
it's
yeah.
called the New Times, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a free paper, yeah.
Right, okay. And I was reading an article in that because I like to keep in touch with what's happening in Phoenix because my mom still lives there and stuff and have friends there. And I was reading this thing. It was talking about vlogging, and it was also talking about podcasting. I'm like, what's up with this stuff? And the vlogging thing, I was realized, wow, it sounds kind of complicated, and I've got more of a podcast-friendly face than I do a vlogging-friendly face. So I decided, you know, that, and just the fact there's a lot more infrastructure, and I mean, there's a lot more editing, and the camera, and lights, and all this kind of stuff. But I'm thinking, hey, you know, the podcasting thing, that sounds like something I could probably handle. And one of the names that it gave, of course, was Adam Curry. So I'm like, wait a second, that name sounds kind of familiar. You know, I remembered him from the MTV days. So
right,
I pop
yeah.
over to Daily Source Code and like, oh, cool. So it's kind of like make your own radio show kind of thing. That seems like fun. And, you know, I was listening to that and enjoying the show somewhat. But the thing I really mostly got from him was at the time he was really evangelizing, like, hey, anyone could do that. I mean, if you have the passion and the interest, you can do this. And I'm like, well, you know what? I've got the passion. I've got the interest. So I want to do this. And so around that time, like April of last year, I'm like, all right, I get a blog set up because I never even blogged before, you know.
Right.
But I figured, hey, you get a podcast, you need a blog, right?
Right?
So you need a blog, you need a microphone, you need a computer. Well, I got all that other stuff. But I went out and got a mic, which I'm using right now. This has been good for me, my Logitech headset, earphone mic headset. And anyhow, I'm like, okay, so when I get going with this stuff, I have all these ideas. But now how do I get the podcast onto my blog? I mean, I didn't know that you needed a hosting service or a server in between to do that. I mean, not at first, and I had some contact with Adam Curry, but I felt, you know, I didn't see any information with this. And one day I heard about Libsyn, okay?
Right.
And it was like, oh, okay, so that's what you need. You need a service like that. They got a server, and they're all set up. It was like, that was really like a service like Podcasting for Dummies. They made it so easy, really easy interface. They set you up with a trial kind of thing. Trial upload of a podcast, so you can see how it is. It was a really great interface. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Prices were reasonable. That's what I'm going to do. So that was the missing link. Around the same time, I took a trip to China. I had a business trip over there, and I got an iRiver because, you know, I'm thinking in my head, well, Adam Curry, he's kind of like the mentor for me, so he's doing this sound seeing stuff with an iRiver, so I need an iRiver so I can do sound seeing stuff and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And so I got on iRiver, took it on my trip to China, had a lot of fun with it, came back, included that in some of my early casts and stuff, and that's what got me going.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, yeah. I mean, you seem to have that story down pretty pat.
Yeah, well, I rehearsed it enough times.
I feel honored, Mark. You know what? This is probably the only interview ever that's Logitech to Logitech. I actually have the Logitech with the bass on my desk here.
Really?
Yeah, it's a cheap mic. I mean, that's kind of been... I'd almost regret coming into a bunch of money and buying really nice equipment, because this has been almost my trademark now for so long with the shitty-ass
right.
mic and the, you know, shitty-ass Audacity. Well, I like Audacity, but, you know, I mean, not the high-end stuff. But now your stuff sounds great, which is what I was not trying to just talk about me in my interview with you, but I mean, your stuff sounds great. I would have guessed that you had a $100 plus mic and great software there too.
No, with me, Jack, what makes me is my great content.
That's what I've been missing. Yes, you've got it.
One of the things, I have good software. I have, you know, kind of a, you know, basically an okay mic. I don't have a good mic, but I have good software. I've had a lot of practice. Let's face it, Jack. On the average, I've done 3 podcasts a week pretty much since I started. So I've got about 150 something podcasts of my own, plus whatever stuff I've guested on and other audio bits that I've done. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that I'm great or anything, but I am somewhat of a veteran. I mean, you know, with that much behind me, I do have some experience now, and I think that helps. And I think the software I'm using is really good. It's called Bias Peak or Peak Bias.
Okay.
I think it's Bias Peak actually, and it's also considered professional level software. So that's helped a lot. And the more I use it, the more I learn to use it. Been that kind of a thing.
So now, and you're. Right, you mentioned the 3 shows, and we should definitely get into plugging them and selling my listeners on them in a minute. But now I guess first I'm curious about your motive. I mean, you got into it a little bit, like it sounded like fun, like something you really wanted to do, but it had nothing to do with your day job. You weren't doing it to promote the day job. But is it all 3 shows? Is it all really just to kind of fill you know, a personal kind of need, like just a hobby, or is there more to it than that?
Well, right. What I started to say, and what I was alluding to earlier on the cultural factor in my personal matrix, because I was getting better and better with my Chinese, more and more fluent, more and more immersed in this culture, and speaking so much Chinese in the regular part of my day, when I started listening to English podcasts, it basically awakened in me. I was hearing guys like Adam, and maybe I heard a guy like Dave Slush. I'm like, wow, these guys are so articulate. I used to be really... articulate like that. My English was really smooth. I realized that it had fallen off some. It got a little bit rusty. You know, Chinese friends used to ask me, it's like, Mark, don't you ever worry about your English getting kind of rusty? I'd laugh like as if that was possible. But it is. I mean, not in a radical kind of way, but in degrees.
Right.
And I realized that. And the other thing, too, is like, wow, it had been so long since I had actually sat and really listened to a lot of thought-provoking stuff in my native language. And so it was kind of like, hey, I need this. It's like, you know, I didn't realize there was a need there, but as soon as I hooked up with podcasting, I realized there was a need to absorb, and there's also a need to put out, because I realized, hey, I have a lot of things inside of me that I feel is important for me to say. I have a lot of music I want to share. I love music. Music was like, it was almost like a savior in my life. I mean, it came into my life at a point where I was extremely unhappy. I mean, you know, like in a bad way. And music came in and really kind of opened up new doors and like new worlds. And so I feel like if there's any way that I could share that and help other people discover some of that in just some small way, that it might bring some more joy or some respite or some focus to the life, hey, it's worth it, and I want to do that. And so that was another motivation. Also, too, thinking in terms of a record, it'd be great if someday if my children and or possibly even grandchildren can have a record of me, of, you know, my ideas, my words, you know. So there's a lot of different levels. You know, it's like a hub with a lot of spokes coming out of it, basically.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, that's a very deep answer. That's good stuff.
I tried, Jack.
Back in... Well, you know, I'm really ashamed because in the middle there you said something about absorbing and putting out, and I'm formulating, you know, like blue jokes to go with that, and you're giving this very deep philosophical answer, and I'm thinking absorb and put out, ha 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 ha. So I'm ashamed.
You know, it can't all be dog water, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right, it's got to be highbrow and lowbrow.
There you go. Got to have that balance.
Now let's talk about that music stuff, because you I mean, I've talked with you on Skype just chatting, you know, I am, and I mean, you really are as knowledgeable as anyone I've ever spoken to about music. I mean, you really seem to have a very broad musical taste and a lot of interest and a lot of knowledge about you know, everything from Pink Floyd to old punk to old soul. I mean, you know, so that, well, around when was that? You mentioned there was the time, the specific time when
okay.
it came in.
Right. It would be my early teens, you know, the peak of adolescence.
Right.
You know, being an adolescent kid in Brooklyn, and also being, you know, Jack, you're from the New York area.
Right.
I mean, you know what a great New York City, a music city New York is. So not only just from the performance standpoint, because you had all those radio stations, I went to a really cool record store, and they would get all these promo copies. Just a second. I've got this idiot keeps ringing my doorbell, thinking I'm the person next door. I'm going to go tell him off. Just a sec.
Wait. You got to Okay.
Yeah, he's still there?
Yeah. Hey, that was priceless. I'm going to keep that in.
Good. So you caught all that. I just basically told the guy off in Chinese. Anyhow, where were we before I got distracted?
We were talking about how your exposure to music. You were talking about there was the record store you used to go to, and how you became an audiophile.
Right. So, you know, basically it was a really cool record store. As a matter of fact, it was called Titus Oaks, and the owner had all these ties with New York DJs. So obviously it was in the height of Paola, where a lot of the DJs are getting paid off in albums. So a lot of those would end up in his store. And so you have like the newest music in perfect condition, some stuff that you couldn't even buy. You know, it was only available for DJs. And so I get access to a lot of stuff like that. He had all kinds of used stuff. He had a very eclectic selection. They were very knowledgeable. You know, that was the old days. I mean, it was probably a little bit after your time, but if you had a good record store connection, if you had this kind of a resource, it was a treasure chest, man, because you had knowledgeable people. They didn't get paid a lot, and they probably didn't make a lot of money, but they were really into it. They were passionate about it, kind of like podcasters.
Right.
Okay? And so it was great. And so I get all kinds of stuff. I was probably buying on the average as a kid, I'd say between 4 and 5 records a week, factoring in trade-ins. And they even did some naughty stuff like trading in some of my mom's stuff that I knew she didn't listen to, and, you know, later made amends with her on that. But, you know, it was just part of the thing. And anyhow, so there was also a neighbor in my building where I lived that was a total jazz freak. And, I mean, he had stuff going back to, like, the 40s. He had, like, original Charlie Parker records with, like, you know, 19 years old Miles Davis on trumpet. I mean, the original pressing and stuff, and all kinds of old stuff on Verve. So I got a great education over there. I was just like a sponge. Because, you know, Jack, you're a musician, and most musicians, it's not like, oh, I'm into this kind of music. They're into music.
Right.
They play this kind of music more than others, but they're into music. They're into whatever connects with them.
Right.
And that's kind of what it was with me. And I think that's what's happening now through the internet with a lot of young people, that they're exposed to more stuff and they're open to more stuff. I think it's great.
Yeah. You know, when I was a teenager in the 80s, and you remember this time too, is that it was basically, well, this is my kind of music and this is what I listen to, and I don't listen to that other stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd be like, oh, I love that new Prince song, but I'm not allowed to like him because I'm in the metal crew.
Right.
Now, I guess I'm curious. I wanted to ask you about some seminal, if there's one or maybe just a couple of seminal albums that you just heard.
Seminal? We're getting back in that dog water thing again, Jack?
Damn it, I knew you were going to go there. But
it's always a circle with you.
Hey, now, there's only two of us. Now, all right, that just ruined the whole interview. No, but let's talk about some really key critical, like, albums that you heard that just absolutely knocked your socks off back in that time where you just kind of,
okay,
just touched you and you said, this is, you know, this is going to be important,
right,
to me no matter what.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, with the jazz input, you know, that was great stuff and that taught me a lot, but I felt like, well, that was my friends. I need something that I could call mine. Mm-hmm. And so I made some, you know, I made some adjustments to that. And so I started getting into more electric stuff. So I started listening to stuff like, late 60s and early 70s Miles Davis, and as an offshoot of that, like Mahavishnu Orchestra.
Love that.
With John McLaughlin.
Excellent stuff, and,
yeah. Yeah, and King Crimson. So, I mean, like the Mahavishnu Orchestra first three albums, I mean, the mid-period King Crimson. I mean, after Greg Lake was gone, I like that stuff, okay, but I like it like mid-period with John Wetton and Bill Bruford, and Fripp was like my idol at the time, Robert Fripp on guitar.
Right.
And then Eno. Because they were, you know, Fripp and Eno were buddies, and I loved Roxy Music, and I loved Eno stuff. I was a big British prog rock kind of guy. Well, back then we didn't call it prog rock, but like Yes and Genesis, and saw a lot of these bands several times, actually. And so a lot of that kind of stuff. I saw Lamb Lies Down on Broadway done live. I saw Selling England by the Pound done live, and it was phenomenal. Peter Gabriel, without a doubt, is the greatest performer that I've ever seen. He's a great vocalist, great singer, great musician, but beyond that, he's just a phenomenal, gifted performer. I mean, he is just totally there.
Wow. Now, that was back when he would put on crazy costumes and stuff on stage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When they did Lamb Lies Down, I saw that at the Academy on 14th Street, and all the amp and the equipment was all like hidden behind like what looked like rocks in a cave kind of thing.
Okay.
So, you know, the whole set was just kind of, you know, it set the mood. And the tour before, when he was doing, he did some of the old stuff where he's, you know, hoisted up on the wires and, you know, singing in the air, or he's got that, like, the flower thing on. But, you know, you would think it would be hokey because we're all kind of, you know, hip, sophisticated New York kids, and, you know, we're too hip for that. But when he does it, you see it happening. It is not hokey, man. It works. You're there. I mean, you're just blown away because he's just, you know, it's just emanating from within him.
Okay. All right, cool. I mean, that's good stuff. And that's cool. I definitely – now, what do you think of John McLaughlin's later on, the stuff he did later, post Mahavishnu?
I like some of it. And I think, you know, not as much – you know, I just think there was something magical about that band, you know, the combination. I mean, all of those guys doing other stuff, they're still great musicians. You know, like the Beatles, you know, going their own way. They, you know, did other, you know, really good things, but just wasn't the Beatles. And I feel that way about Mahavishnu. It's just one of those bands with the, you know, Billy Cobham on drums, Jan Hammer on keyboards, Jerry Goodman on violin, you know, McLaughlin on guitar. And, you know, the bass player was okay. He's pretty much interchangeable, but he was good. But, you know, those other guys, just that combination, the sparks would fly.
Yeah, and for everyone out there listening and saying, who the fuck are they talking about? It's Mahavishnu is a fusion band. And if you listen to it, if you just listen to it with open ears, it sounds like rock. It sounds like hard rock. It sounds like instrumental hard rock.
Oh, it's intense.
Yeah.
See, the way I related to this stuff, like King Crimson, it was like heavy metal for people with brains. Or for people whose brains were completely wasted on Carbona.
I know you look at Ozzy, but I'd say Sabbath had their cerebral side. I mean, I know you look at Ozzy, and that's kind of the argument against it. But
See, I couldn't get into Sabbath at that point. They were happening then. The reason I couldn't get into it is because I was already dealing with depression in my life, and if I listened to them, that was too much. It'd be like, hey, I'm gonna go over the edge, and so I would stay away from their stuff. And later on, when I was in a much better, you know, mental state, and going back and listen, hey, that's wonderful stuff. I dig it. You know, what I'm saying, just music. You know, I'm very sensitive to music, and so, you know, there's a reason, I guess, why I gravitated to the stuff I did at the time I did. But, yeah, there's a lot of intensity in that kind of jazz rock or fusion or whatever. And, you know, same thing with King Crimson. I mean, that's a different form of metal. I mean, it's not classified as such, but it really is metal. And, you know, or some of it has even, you know, been, I guess, recodified as math rock, you know. And some of that stuff is great. I mean, I love Tool. I mean, again, it's just like, if it's good, I like it. If it can touch a chord in me, I don't care about the category. I don't care about the age of the people doing it or their culture. I like it. I listen to it, and I'll play it.
She said, "Great Scott, are you a thief? Seems like you have a mouth full of gold teeth. Ha 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 ha. I had to find that funny. So I said, no, child, I work hard for the money. Calling me a thief? Please don't even try it. Sit down, eat your slice of pizza, and be quiet." She almost got cut short, you know, scissors. She tried to disrespect who? The Grand Wizard. All right, that's from one of the sacred texts of rap music, the Slick Rick classic, Mona Lisa. You absolutely have to hear Mona Lisa, and you absolutely have to hear Indian Girl by Slick Rick. Okay, back to Mark Forman.
Frugal Tommy.
Now go ahead, and we kind of got on a huge detour. We didn't even get to plugging your show. So go ahead and
right.
You've heard my interview, so I kind of do like to do the past, present, and future story arc for my guests. So you kind of told your past a little bit. Let's talk about the present and plug your shit.
Right. Okay. So, you know, currently, you know, I'm doing the podcast Getting a Leg Up, and it comes out in a few different flavors. I mean, the whole series, or the podcast name is Getting a Leg Up, but then I have some subheadings. And basically, because I'm an eclectic person, I get kind of bored real easy. And when I do, I like to make changes because I feel if I'm interested and what I'm doing is interesting, then people listening will also find interesting. And so under Getting a Leg Up, I also do shows under the Minefield name, which would probably be a little bit more conceptual and probably, you know, almost no talk, just some kind of concept behind it, or maybe some, just some kind of thematic thing, and there's just music at the time with that. Within Getting a Leg Up, I also do something I came up with called Song Stories, which is where I choose a bunch of music, and from the song titles, I build a story on the fly as I'm recording. Right. And so that's been kind of fun, and I've gotten a lot of good response from that. And then I also do another series of podcasts called Free Culture News, which is inspired by, obviously, by the book Free Culture. And what I do there is I often have interviews with different people in the community, in the culture, podcasters, authors, audio book authors, etc., musicians. And so that's been a lot of fun. I've done a podcast. I was the first person and only that I know of to podcast Cory Doctorow's Down and Out in the Magic Kingdom, and I combined it with music. And I'm also finishing up working on Free Culture, the book, as a podcast, also combining with music. And as a result of that, I've also been doing some audio stuff for a show that you're well acquainted with called Winging It, which is part of the Dragon Page group over there with Michael and Evo.
Right.
And been doing some, you know, audio bits over there. And as a result of that, I decided, yeah, I'd like to go ahead and do some of my show. And I've come up with the XY files that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
And been doing that on my show. And they're coming out very soon as a patio book over on patiobooks.com.
Cool. Yeah, that's another place. So, yeah, I'm, you know, people know me from there.
Right.
Yeah. So
absolutely.
Well, yeah, definitely look forward to XY files on patio books. That would be cool stuff. You can feel free to delve into that a little bit more if you want, since you mentioned
it
before.
Yeah, actually, I came up with the idea because originally I was thinking, hey, this might be good content over for over there at Winging It, and so I kind of was going with a little bit of a sci-fi bent. I had in mind, I basically want to do something kind of like, you know, Deckard, the Deckard character from Blade Runner, you know,
right.
The Philip K. Dick novel, and because I kind of like that. I've always liked detective stories, and, you know, to me it's like, okay, you got like the Sam Spade and sci-fi. That's good stuff. That's a lot of good material to work with. And so I started out with that, and I was saying, okay, I was kind of using maybe the X-Files as kind of somewhat of a platform to take off from. And so that's kind of where it started out. Well, then I realized, you know, it's kind of lengthy, and I think I'd rather have it just on my show. And so I've been developing the character as we go along. Now, what's unique about this to me, whereas like most of you guys, you have written your book in the first place or written your short story in the first place, then you adapted it by reciting it in front of the microphone and putting it out on patio books. What I'm doing is entirely the opposite. I'm basically developing the story and the character as I go along, and I'm basically writing the dialogue. I'm scripting it, you know, for each episode prior to recording it. So there's a little bit different process, and I think probably a little bit different tone as a result.
Sure. Right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's all gravy. And this is a new hat for you, right? I mean, you're relatively new to the fiction writing thing.
Oh, very, very new. I mean, this is my maiden voyage, if you will.
Okay.
So be gentle with me, Jackie.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Yeah, please don't.
Well, best of luck with all that stuff. I mean, that's very
yeah, good. Thanks.
Best of luck. So I guess you've kind of touched a little bit on the future there, anyway. But let's ask it flat out. What is the future then? You've got a lots of stuff going on. What is the future for Mark Forman?
Right. Well, from a creative standpoint, I'll continue to obviously do my podcast. I'll continue to develop this particular part of the book. Behind that, I've already got a couple of different ideas. One is to write some fiction about, based on my experiences here as an expat in Asia, which I find a lot of people have a very high level of interest because I guess there's something somewhat exotic and mysterious about a white man in Asia, something like that. And so I think there's, you know, I have a lot of, you know, material just from having lived here for almost 20 years. I've done a lot of different things, had a lot of different experiences. So I think there's, you know, some good fodder for the gristmill, if you will.
But you're gonna make it fictional and then call it autobiography?
Shh, That now you said that. I didn't say that. I haven't made it. You know, in these days, Jack, I mean, we've touched upon a real sensitive issue, haven't we?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like that's the thing to do these days. You know, say that you're writing, you know, something nonfictional, and in fact, it is fiction. Say you're writing nonfiction. In fact, you know, it's plagiarized. But I won't be plagiarizing anyone, but I will be writing probably a fictional work based on some true subject matter.
Well, I guess there's a problem when you're writing something sort of autobiographical and you're plagiarizing. Then you're
right. I'm a body snatcher.
I'm not going to touch that one either.
So what, snatch?
Yikes. So now we didn't really touch you. I mean, you mentioned your wife. Now, you are a family guy, and you've heard me ask this question before. Now, how do you between being a full-time businessman running your own business and a very busy podcaster and now a writer too, I mean, how do you make it all fit, you know, spending time with your family and friends and having a life outside of this stuff?
Well, that's just it. This is my life, because I spend a lot of time with my family. If I'm not busy at work, I'm home with my family and with my son. And my son, when he'll be here in a few minutes, because we have our own business. We have the luxury of having my son, when he gets here from school, coming here. So I get to see my son every day and for many hours each day, both during the job and after the job, so to speak. Right. And that's great. I'm really happy about that. And basically, my life has become very simple. If I'm not home with my family or here at the office doing business stuff, then I'm probably here doing podcast or fiction stuff. So basically, I don't really go out anymore. I don't have a social life. And that's great, because I don't need one. I have a family. I have my creative outlet and also my inlet, which is the internet. So, and that being said, actually, a lot of my social life is over the internet, because I have a lot of virtual friends like you. Well, we've actually met, so you kind of spoiled that. I mean, here was us thinking you were, you know, 12 feet tall, black, and a woman. But, you know, we met, right. and now I know that you're not.
Right, I'm only 7 feet tall, right.
There you go. But, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I have a lot of virtual friends, you know, podcasting friends and blogging friends and whatnot, and that's great. And so just with what I've got going on now, that keeps me plenty busy, and I'm basically being very resourceful with my office resources, because they're serving my business, they're also serving my podcasting and my writing, et cetera.
And cool. And it seems like you're set to be the Brooklyn Bluesman Shogun of Taiwan for life. It seems like you don't have any plans on coming back to the States.
That's hard to say. I'm totally open to that. I mean, I love the States. It's just that for right now, you know, I still got my business going here, and it's cool being here. I mean, it's a gas being here. And, you know, it's funny. A lot of people ask me about this, and I think I'm really fortunate, because when I go back to the States, I remember Taiwan and, like, the trip over to the States almost kind of like it was a dream, and I'm very happy to be back home. And then when I come back to Taiwan from the States, I remember the States and the trip back from the States kind of like a dream, and I'm very happy to be back at my home, which is Taiwan.
Okay.
So I'm a man with two countries.
I mean, you know, most Deadpan listeners are familiar with you.
Getting a leg up, yeah.
Right, and that's true. I mean, you're definitely in the lead for promos and stuff played, and you even have a new one for me, which I have yet to debut.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, my listeners are definitely familiar with you.
That's cool.
Now
your listeners are fun guys and gals.
Yeah, they grow on you.
I'm not going to touch that.
No, that they're
so,
all.
So is it true that you and Joe Murphy are really the same person? I'm a little bit confused about this.
Yeah, we cell divided a couple of months back, and now we're...
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're separate individuals now, yeah.
So it's kind of an asexual division, or...?
Moving right along. So, I guess, why don't you finish up with a cool kind of culture shock story. And go ahead with... And it doesn't necessarily have to be a raunchy one, but, I mean, you feel free to...
right. Give me just a second here. A culture shock... yeah. Okay, here's one. I was working, this is at a time I was still living in Taipei, which is the capital of Taiwan here. It's the big city. And I was renting an apartment with another American roommate. And it's kind of weird. It almost seemed like all of my foreign friends in Taipei always lived in one of these old buildings that had five stories and maybe a sixth one built on, so they kind of bypassed having to install an elevator. And for some reason, it was always foreigners living on the top floor. And I'm like, man, I don't know. What is this, like some unwritten rule that we have to live on the top floor? So it's like whenever you're going to see a friend or have a friend come, you're always getting a lot of exercise.
Okay.
So we lived on the fifth floor. And I remember my landlady, who was kind of an interesting lady, was having the place repainted for us. And so there was one morning, I think it was a Sunday morning. And, you know, Sunday, you're a young guy, single at the time, and so we've probably been up partying a little bit the night before, and you tend to want to sleep in a little bit. I'm hearing some kind of sound coming from the living room or something, so I decided to go and investigate. So I walk out there in my underwear, and there's my landlady. So she's a little bit embarrassed, and so am I, but I'm also a little bit pissed off. It's like, what are you doing here? She said, oh, well, you know, the painter, I wanted to bring him in and let him, you know, let him take a look at the paint, let him take a look at the color. I remember what it was. They had already painted, and I wasn't too happy with the way it came out because I told her what color to use. And what was going on was he had a poster of mine that a friend of mine had made. And this was one of those kind of like collage kind of things with, you know, where it was really nicely done. It was like all hand cut. And this guy was using that. And he was getting, like, paint all over because he's a painter. He's got paint all over his hands. He's got, like, paint on my friend's the poster my friend made for me. And he's kind of, like, you know, drying a spot on the wall to try to get a comparison. Just like, you know, that's all fine and good, but you need to get out of here because I'm still sleeping it off. So, you know, we'll talk about that later. I mean, there's just a different mindset. I mean, and whereas I probably wouldn't face someone from here, you know, to us coming from our culture and, like, respect for privacy and stuff, you know, we tend to look at things a little bit differently. And that probably wasn't one of my best stories, which I'll save for my novel, Jack. But anyhow, it'll give you an indication that there's a lot of different cultural differences. But the key thing is that there's still people, and there's a lot of really neat people, and, you know, both here and in the States. And that's what makes it exciting, just hooking up with the good people all around this planet.
Good stuff, Mark. That actually was a very good story, Mark. It's just, I'm a deadpan guy, and I don't bust out laughing like.
Oh, you, okay.
You've got that.
I was wondering there for a second if you were being deadpan or just being deadpan.
So you've got that boisterous laugh. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, I mean, I'm just deadpan Jack. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I can't help. I figure, you know, you only get one crack at it. So if you can't have a few laughs, you know.
No, this is very serious.
It's kind of dull. But deadpan's okay because you're laughing inside. I mean, it's like when you're sitting there with that stone face, you're laughing your ass up inside.
Actually,
so we know that.
Actually, I'm crying inside, Mark. I don't know if you... Well, that's a good way to leave out. So thanks for being on the Deadpan Podcast.
My pleasure, buddy.
Mark. It was a lot of fun. And everyone go out and go to... You didn't actually give the URL, but it's bbluesman.com. And
that's correct.
You can get to access to everything, all things Mark Forman from there.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks, Mark. And thank you for listening to the Deadpan Podcast. And thank you, Sir Ian McKellen, for being an awesome Gandalf. And thank you, RK, for your donation. Very cool. And if you out there listening want to donate, then find the button in the sidebar at www.jackmangan.com and feel free to donate. And do we have time for an unrelated thought? Yeah, sure we do. Unrelated thought. Note to Jimmy Buffett. Mr. Buffett, I still maintain that there's a woman to blame. So until next week, keep in touch with me, keep in touch with yourself, and keep it deadpan. We're going to leave off with a bluesy little Matt Mango number called New Controlled Land. No, that's not it. Here it is. Matt Mango, New Controlled Land. Zones, the man and those that bought the farm, the
those that run the scam in the news. When the new land hits, we'll all see this. Division splits, all my love kicks and kicks in the new. Do all I can do, each moment struggles through. I'm hard then ripped, and then broke into the new. I know your garden's full, yet I see myself and you in the new. Do all I can do, each moment struggles through. I'm hard then ripped, and then broke into the new. Those that bought the farm, those that run the scam in the